Hey, this is Ari. Welcome back to the Energy Blueprint Podcast. In this episode, I'm speaking with my good friend, Emily Fletcher, who is on the podcast for her third time. She's the founder of Ziva Meditation and has taught the Ziva technique to over 40,000 people, her, including me, by the way. Her best-selling book, Stress Less, Accomplish More, debuted at number 7 out of all books on Amazon and has been translated into 12 languages. Her work has been featured by the New York Times, Good Morning America, The Today Show, Vogue, and ABC. She's been named one of the top 100 women in wellness to watch and has taught at Apple, Google, and Harvard Business School. This, as I said, is her third time on the podcast. The previous two, we talked about meditation. And in this episode, we focus on her latest exploration and teachings in the world of relationships, sexuality, spirituality, and manifestation, and the connection between all of those things. So I think you'll enjoy this very fun and insightful conversation. So welcome back to the show, my friend.
Is this my second time? My third time?
I think it might be your third time.
I feel like I want like an SNL jacket or something, or at least like a trophy.
I will give you some sort of gold medal.
A tiara, perhaps?
Yes, yes. I will have a special Energy Blueprint tiara made for you.
Okay, maybe for my fourth time on.
Fourth, yeah, for sure. So it's been a while since we talked, a long while, actually. Yeah. And I know from a few text exchanges here and there and watching what's going on social media that a lot has happened in your life since we last spoke.
A lot.
Give us all the rundown, and where has our magical meditation guru gone in her life and her personal journey since we last spoke?
Yeah, so deep in 2020, living in New York City, full lockdown, like full protests, haven't been on a plane. And I decided that would be a great time to get a divorce. So I went ahead and just like put myself through some sort of initiation. I'm not sure what, but it was full out. And then 3 weeks later, I met my now best friend, Layla Martin, who's this world famous Tantra teacher. I met this amazing man named Adam, who became this cosmic lover, which we can define what that is later. And then I moved in with this amazing woman named Regina Thomashower, AKA Mama Gina, who is known for running the School of Womanly Arts for the past 30 years. Also for her New York Times bestselling book called Pussy, A Reclamation. So all of a sudden, my whole life turns upside down. I go from being like married in New York City in lockdown to like at a faux Burning Man festival with these world-class tantricas having full Kundalini awakenings and getting my world rocked. And it felt like nature was kind of fire hosing me in this PhD in sacred sexuality, which is fun for my own personal edification, but it felt bigger than that. Like it felt like, oh, hey, like pay attention. And so it feels like what nature is asking me to do is to do for sacred sexuality what I did for meditation, which is basically to take it from this amorphous, sort of esoteric, hard to understand, behind a lot of veils and secrecy and incense and just pomp and circumstance, and like make it attractive and accessible and relatable to a more mainstream audience. And so it feels like a big job, but an exciting job, because when you start to even mention, like, first of all, like, what is sacred sexuality? When you even mention the word sex, people get triggered in 800 different ways. And so I recognize the intensity of what I'm walking into, but I also feel the profundity. And it feels like if we are going to solve these pretty enormous challenges that we're being faced with as a species, we're going to need our most creative energy source available to us. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a fun ride. It's been a wild ride, and I'm learning a lot.
So I feel like when you don't talk to somebody for a while and then you ask them like, so what's new? And then typically the response is something like, oh, not a whole lot, you know, pretty much same old stuff. I feel like you're kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum from that. Like, since I last spoke to you, you've become a new person, and your whole world has turned upside down and inside out, and like this whole new world has opened up to you. Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and that's
seems like we have a lot to talk about.
Getting, you know, is that people are like, oh, you seem like a new person. Mm-hmm. And actually, I don't know that's true. I think I feel more myself. But I feel like I'm coming home more and more to myself. Mm-hmm. But I think that the energy signature to anyone externally would feel like a new person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's define sacred sexuality. So what's the difference between sex and intimacy as normal mortals do it versus this this sacred sexuality
gods and goddesses
thing? And by the way, I should say I live in Nosara in Costa Rica, where there's like a sacred sexuality tantra breathwork something happening every 3 days. So you know, this is, you know, I'm pretty familiar with this territory, but for our listeners who maybe don't live in the land of New Age spirituality and tantra breathwork seminars happening every other day, you tell us what's the deal with this?
Yeah, well, what I'd be curious to know is, like, if 5 years ago or 10 years ago, were there tantra breathwork ceremonies happening every other day, even in Nosara, even in Tulum? And I'm legitimately curious about that, because my assumption is that we're in sort of like the precipice of this, of a new sexual awakening. Mm-hmm. And I could just be in an echo chamber. So I'm willing to be proven wrong about that. And certainly there's been pockets of this happening. There's been like very active communities and pockets of society, you know, for time immemorial. And since these practices have gone sort of underground. Mm-hmm. But I would define sacred sexuality is basically any time you are unioning with your own soul, with your higher self, and utilizing this the most creative energy source available to us, which is our sexual energy. So that could be in a solo practice, that could be in partnered practice, that could be in group practice. But if there is an intention there to connect with the divine, then I really think that that's all that would define it as sacred. And that could happen in a BDSM dungeon. That could happen in a married couple, monogamous for 20 years. That could happen with you and yourself. But I think that the difference would be that, again, the intention is to connect with the divine, which is different than like, oh, I just want to orgasm to fall asleep, or I'm trying to conquer this person to make myself feel powerful, or I'm going to just like watch porn and use a vibrator to like get to some end state as quickly as possible. Again, no judgment in any of those. And I would say that God is everywhere, right? Like God is literally in everywhere and everything, including all of that. But the intention really matters. Just like, what's the difference between meditation and sitting quietly on your couch with your eyes closed? It's very much intention. Mm-hmm. And so what I have found, though, is that, I mean, and I'm sure you could back this up more scientifically than I can, but when you simply like change like why you're engaging in things, it can change the entire experience. Mm. But I'm curious to know what's been your experience in Nosara? Like, how are things shaking down for you?
There's too much to tell there. And I don't want to distract too much from the focus on you here by own personal anecdote. So,
all right. You'll have to tune in later for the bonus episode.
Yes, part two. Ari's breathwork, shamanic breathwork, tantric retreats,
where Emily finally gets her tiara.
Yeah, exactly. So, why sex? Why should one use sex specifically as this bridge towards the divine? Like, why not some other area of life? Like, what is sacred about sex, or what is present in that act that is, I don't know, useful in this context of sort of connecting with the divine?
Well, the thing that I'm really interested in is basically helping people to remember that they can use this energy to create what they really want in their lives. And then I'd say maybe even more importantly, to create what we really want on the planet. So the thing that I've really latched into, because there's, you know, so many different modalities, so many different areas of, you know, partner practice, breath work, Kundalini awakening, moving energy, like there's a million different areas to go in. And I do not consider myself like an expert in tantra. I do not consider myself an expert in any of those modalities. What I am an expert in is consciousness, stress, manifestation, And now, after the past 2.5, 3 years, it's just been initiation after initiation after initiation to unlock what I would consider just like jet fuel, rocket fuel for your dreams, right? So if you think about it, every time, like, it is possible for humans to procreate. It's one of the most divine, God-like things we could do as human beings, is to create another human being. And sex is part of that creation process. And every time we orgasm, we do not make a baby. You know, thank goodness, it'd be very crowded on planet Earth if every time people were in orgasmic states, they were procreating.
I'd have a lot of financial demands on me if that were the case.
Yeah, like suddenly I 8 zillion children. And yet, every time we're in that orgasmic state, we have the exact neurochemical cocktail that we need to manifest, right? So we want, there's certain brain states and internal chemistry that needs to be present when you're manifesting. And it's like the opposite of fight or flight. You want to be stay and play, right? So opposite of sympathetic, you want to be in parasympathetic. You want that dopamine, you want that serotonin. But then when you start to add sexual energy onto things, you start to up the oxytocin, the love hormone. You also start to add in a bit of adrenaline to really like amp things up. I also think there's more norepinephrine post-orgasm than there is in post-meditation. So just like when I teach Ziva meditation, at the end of the meditation, I invite people to simply think about for 2 minutes, what would you love, right? What would you love right now? And doing that in the post-meditative state is really powerful, because the right and left hemispheres of the brain are talking to each other, because you are in a, it's like the soil is more fertile. It's more fertile ground for you to plant the seeds of your dreams. And now there's a practice that's been practiced for thousands of years, which I call pleasure prayer, where you're basically just using your pleasure to pray. And I get that both of those words can be a little prickly, especially for people who are raised in any sort of dogma or doctrine. But I like the audacity of combining them. Like, I like putting those two things together, because it feels reverent to what I want to be reverent to, and irreverent to what I don't want to be reverent to.
The religious traditions that have made sex associated with sin.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's been many tens of thousands of years campaign to sort of divorce us from our own divinity, to try to make us forget that we actually have the ability to plug directly into God, and we don't need to go through an organization or a person or tithing or a pope or anything really, that energy, I'm calling it creation energy or source energy, is truly inside of everyone and everything all the time. And to allow ourselves to remain under this illusion that sex is dirty or wrong or shameful or something to be embarrassed about, or makes you, you know, if you're not doing it in a certain way at a certain time with a certain type of person, that you're going to go to hell. Like, all of these things, I think, have really done an extraordinary number on human beings. It's created a lot of unnecessary suffering. And it's quite literally divorced us from our own divinity. And so part of what I'm so passionate about with this is not only reminding people, because we know it in ourselves already. It's just remembering that we actually can harness and utilize this energy and then direct it towards the things that we really want in life. And then the good news is that when you start doing that, when you reclaim that pleasure, when you reclaim that energy, there's an extraordinary amount of liberation that happens as a byproduct, simply because of all the cultural conditioning that most of us are swimming in.
So there's like three pieces to this, and it's all kind of connected by this immaterial, sort of mysterious, magical energy sort of thing. And one piece is like our own personal sex, libido, you know, kind of like the physical act of sex, combined with a connection to the divine, connected to, this idea of manifestation. Mm-hmm. So sort these things out for me, like, yeah. How and why are these things connected? Why does my act of sex or my orgasm have anything to do with manifesting my dreams in life?
Yeah. So when most people are manifesting, or let me correct that. If people are consciously manifesting, because I would argue that we're manifesting all the time, right? If you want to know what you're manifesting, just look around. Every thought we think is in fact creating our reality. And that's sometimes a hard pill to swallow, especially if we don't like our current reality. But it's good news, like you haven't done anything wrong. We've all inherited an extraordinary amount of epigenetics. We have environmental factors. So it's not blaming or shaming anyone for the current state of affairs. It's simply reminding people that they can in fact get their hands on the gears and that they can start to point, again, the most creative force that we have towards the thing that they would really love. And so it's not just, like hippy dippy woo woo, like we're gonna like make a vision board and then we're gonna have sex disparately and then we're gonna just like hope that it shows up, right?
So should we like lay the vision board on the bed and have sex on the vision board? Would that be helpful?
That's it. That's exactly it. just make sure you get a cushy vision board. I mean, not no. I would.
It's not a bad idea, right? I got you thinking. Hey, if you end up writing a book using my idea, I want some royalties. I want my cut.
Okay. Well, you're already mentioned in my last book. So So most of us, I would argue that your dreams, your manifestations are actually already on the way. That when you're manifesting, it's simply, it's like feeling the breeze in the subway tunnel before the train comes. Like I believe that our desires are divinely inspired, right? That nature has actually given you the desire. And so when we manifest it, it's already on the way. All we're doing is that we're sort of clearing the blocks, the limiting beliefs, anything keeping us from accepting the opportunity when it arises or sabotaging it when we get the chance. That's part of what manifestation is, right? It's helping you to remember that you deserve your desires. And so what we do when we add our sexual energy into that is that we take it out of just the mind, right? Of it just being a mental practice, and we start to move it down into the body. Now this does a few things. One, most of our fear and our limiting beliefs are happening in the mind. And if we can start to get into the body, there's a different level of deserving power. There's a different level of ownership that starts to happen. Also, you could think about it as if you are making love to your dream. Like you are making love to the thing that arguably you want more than anything else in the world. And what a lot of people mistakenly do when they think about their dreams is that they're like, oh gosh, I would love $1 million. But there's no way I can make that on my current salary. And the tax rate is so bad. Inflation is so bad. And like, so it's like they say the thing that they want and they immediately start listing all the reasons that they can't have it. Or like, I would love to meet my person, but I'm 44 years old and I'm divorced and I have a son and I live in New York City and I never go out and I'm not, right? So it's like we accidentally insult our dreams subconsciously. And so what we're doing in this practice, where you start to harness the sexual energy and let it dance with the desire, is that it's like you're reminding your body that it's safe when the dream shows up. It's actually, you're programming all of your cells to be in love with your dream. Just like, you know, if you've been married for 15 years, sometimes you have to like consciously make a habit of making love to your person to remind your cells to tune to each other. What we're doing when we do pleasure prayer is that we're tuning our cells to the frequency of the dream so that you start to long for it like you would a lover, so that you start to be excited about it when you see it like you would a lover, instead of just like, well, I don't deserve it and it's never showing up and all of the subconscious stories.
You know, when I asked you that, I thought it was going to be a hard question to answer. And I would say you knocked it out of the park with that answer. That was really well done. I'm impressed. I feel like I need to go take a break from this podcast to go do some pleasure prayer right now. That's how convinced I am.
Well, what are you manifesting? What are you praying for?
I have a top secret new business project. That's, a new brand I'm building. I can't divulge any details yet, but it's a big thing. It's so big that it's like, it's not just exciting for me. It's like 50% exciting, 50% super scary, because I don't know if I can do it. I don't know if all the things are going to come together. I don't know if I have enough money to do all the things that I need to do to make it work. And that would be the main top of mind thing. That's a pretty big thing.
First of all, congratulations on dreaming so big that it feels scary, right? Like dreaming so big that you're not sure that you could do it. Cause I would argue if you knew that you could do it, if you knew you had enough money, if you knew it was going to work, then it's not really a dream. It's a to-do list, right? So like, great job, you're dreaming. And I would offer that, like, if you did want to do this practice, that like the how and the when is not your job. Like, do I have enough money? Like all the sort of like the ways that the mind keeps it stuck in the how, mm-hmm. like you can throw those out the window and then put all of this energy on, like, what would it feel like when it's actually happening, right? Which is truly our why. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing about all manifestation practice, but especially with pleasure prayer, is that you're giving yourself the gift of the thing twice, because ostensibly you're going to feel elated when the thing happens. And now you're going to get to feel elated right now as you get into the feeling space as if that dream is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Nicely.
And here's a fun piece about pleasure prayer, is that it's not just the practice itself. Afterwards, in that post-climactic state, this is where we insert listening. And oftentimes, like, your next right action, the person you're supposed to call, the idea that's going to get you the funding, like in that state where, you know, again, right and left hemispheres of the brain are functioning in unison. I mean, think about when you ask most people how they feel post-climax, it's like pure, empty, blissful, connected to God, divine, holy. Like, you are sort of in that liminal space, similar to post-meditation, but more amped and more in your body. And so if you insert, just like you would Shavasana at the end of a yoga class, right, where you're letting the profundity of all of those practices sort of substantiate into the brain and body. Now we want to do the same thing post-climax, right? Like, you've held the vision of the dream. You've started to build that charge and energy and moved it through the energy centers from root to crown. And then it's like you're devoting that love that you've made in your body. You're devoting that to the thing that you want to magnetize. Also, not for nothing, the electromagnetic field in the body gets bigger when you're in a state of love than when in a state of fear, right? Like, everything shrinks energetically when we're in fear. We know that when we're in our heart, when we're in our bodies, we're in a state of love, like, our field gets bigger. Our electromagnetic field gets bigger. And if manifesting is magnetizing, then cool, magnet is stronger, mm-hmm. right? And then post-climax, you want to make sure that you leave spaciousness to listen, right? And no agenda, just like 2 or 3 minutes, just play your favorite song and see what drops in. And that's a fun space to receive guidance on next steps from your boss.
Got it. Okay, so I have some practical questions for you. So should I be having sex with my partner and in the act of sex be thinking about my goals and vision that I want to manifest? Or, I mean, to some extent, that is taking me out of the present moment connection of that experience, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I can see how what you're talking about might work better in the context of masturbation than, mm-hmm. or whatever a nicer word is for that, you know, self-pleasuring.
Yeah. And just masturbation is actually a term that was invented by the church, that which means to defile. And so
let's get rid of that term. Let's throw it out the window.
Yeah. So it's like, there's a reason why it doesn't feel good, that word, because it was meant to make you not feel good about the act. And so I do think in your Nosara hippie circles, the term is self-pleasuring.
Yes.
I'll see if I'm playing with the term master fate, masturbation, because you're mastering fate. So anyway, we can play with that. Okay. So
What about manifestation?
Great. Are you in branding, Ari?
So again, I can see how it would work better in the context of self-pleasuring.
Yep.
But I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be with my partner having sex and be doing like trying to remind myself to do specific breath work practices. Like, we're in the moment, we're in missionary position, and then I'm like, okay, think of my dreams, bring the energy up, manifest the dreams, you know. So give me the rundown. How do I actually do what you're describing and also remain present to the experience?
Great question. So you can do pleasure prayer partnered, solo, in a group setting. Like, my dream is honestly, like, one of them, it was to have 80,000 people in a stadium climaxing at the same time, holding a collective dream for the species. I was planning an event at a bank with 1,000 people, this abandoned bank that looked like a temple, like Hogwarts. And I was going to have 1,000 people in there. So I'm interested in like, let's make a big antenna. Let's do this like en masse. And, you know, we're not there yet. Just culturally, I don't think that I think the rubber band will snap back too hard and too far at the moment. So I'm interested in like making more sustainable expansion and growth. But to your question, I think like anything with sex, we want to have consent. Right. And so if you're with another person, we want to be honoring of their experience. We want to be honoring of the third thing that we are creating together. And if you have one agenda or goal and your partner has another agenda or goal or isn't aware of your goal, then that's going to create discord. It's going to create distance.
So and like so I'm using a girl to have sex with while in order to manifest my financial aspirations.
I mean, look, if they are consensual to that, then, you know, like, again, all of it comes down to like, is the person on board and are they a yes or a no?
Yeah.
But in the case of your partner, you know, I think that if the intention is to create more unity, then you want to be on the same page.
Right.
So I would say it would be fun to experiment, like to really do it, to be like, hey, I just did this podcast. I was learning about this thing. It sounds really cool. Would you like to try it? And if so, like when would be good? And you sort of like set aside a time to do it. And then I would make a ceremony out of it. You know, it doesn't have to be huge, but you know, maybe light a candle, maybe write down, spend one song and write down like what would you love and why? And then maybe share it with each other so that you can hold the vision for each other as well. And then you can make love however you like to make love. It doesn't have to be any sort of like, it doesn't have to be anything in particular per se. And then if you both orgasm, then great at the moment of orgasm, or if not, then just at the peak pleasure moment, right? Let's like take the pressure off of orgasm or climax and whatever is the most peak pleasurable state, then you would sort of send that energy, send that love that you have created to the thing that you are wanting to manifest. Now, dream case, if you're climaxing at the same time, then easy, right? Then you just sort of like, you know, can be in your own private shavasana, in your own experiences. And then afterwards, I would definitely debrief, right? Like share what it was like for you, hear what it was like for them. And I would recommend that for all intimate settings anyway, because it just creates more closeness. And then you learn more about each other on the other side. Now, if you're not climaxing at the same time, it's totally fine. You can just take a moment. And if whoever climaxes first, it's like we take a pause and we just hold space and it's just, and just remind them. And so like what my partner and I do is he just says like, anything you want, everything you want, anything you want, everything you want. So even if it's not like a specific ceremony, that anytime either of us is climaxing, like in that moment afterwards, we just like take the time to remember to pray, to just take advantage of this space where like the veil is thin. And I know you hate that hippie terminology, but let's say we're like the right and left brains are dancing together, where you are like more unioned with the thing that lives beyond the body than you are just doing your taxes, right? It is a different state of consciousness for sure. So it's like taking advantage of that beautiful euphoric feeling in the body to get into the feeling spaces if your dream has already happened. And it doesn't have to take a long time. So short answer, I would be intentional about it. Get consent for the first time, like actually do it, you know, like be deliberate about the dream. Maybe even as you're making love, if you wanted to imagine the energy moving from root, I would call it hoo-ha, up into heart and then up into your head. And it also, it might be easier to practice to start on your own. So when you're in a solo self-pleasure practice, then you're going to be able to be in your own time. You're going to be able to take as much time as you want with the dream. You can take as much time afterwards. So I would say just like learning to juggle, you know, you don't want to start with 10 balls, just start with two, right? And it's just you and your dream. You and your dream, and then you could add in your partner, right? You, your dream, and your partner. And then you build up.
Are there any sexual positions that are uniquely advantageous for manifestation?
Great question. I don't know the answer to that. I have a great book. There's a great book called Modern Sex Magic. It's very intense. It's not a joke. But there's all different constellation and configurations of soloed, partnered, group, like, and it gets pretty wild in there. But from my experience, it's really just like, where do you feel comfortable? Where do you feel safe? Where could you be the most relaxed afterwards, after that peak pleasure moment?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. What are your thoughts on, and this pertains more to men, but on ejaculation. So there's mm-hmm. many Eastern practices, Qigong traditions, where there's specific training that one does in order to learn how to injaculate, as some people say, learn how to have non-ejaculatory orgasms and become mm-hmm. multi-orgasmic. I have a personal friend down here, one of my closest friends, who is a super interesting guy, and he's always just, I love hanging out with him because he's always just thinking in new ways. Like, he's such an original thinker, and he's always thinking very deeply on some random topic. So every week when I talk to him, he's got some new thing that's on his mind that he wants to have like a 3-hour conversation about. Super interesting guy. And one of the things that he told me that I found fascinating is he has sex like 5 times a day with his wife. And he only ejaculates like 1 time per month. Something along those lines, 1 time, maybe every 2 weeks, per month, something like that. And he has noticed, and there are many people who report similar stories of energy, in massive increases in their energy level, in their brain function, in their motivation and drive, in their just mood, feeling very good, libido, like his libido is extremely high because clearly. He has those, yeah, clearly. I was like, 5 times a day, dude?
Jeez. I mean, does he have a job or like when?
He kind of has a job. He's like, okay. It's a very loose job, but whatever minimal amount of hours he's working are clearly getting in the way of the sex.
Impressive. But,
so yeah, that was my attitude. I was like, I don't even know if I could do that at age 17, dude. And what you said is what I said to him. I was like, don't you have stuff to do? How do you just sit around the house all day? Like, anyway, so we have this kind of history and historical accounting in certain traditions and many, many modern anecdotes of people, men reporting things like this. On the other side of it, you have people with porn addiction, men with porn addiction who are self-pleasuring multiple times a day, having ejaculatory orgasms multiple times a day. And there are certain neurological consequences of that, which are sort of the opposite of what I just described. Low energy, mm-hmm. social anxiety, depressed mood, you know, kind of all these negative effects. So how do you feel about that whole aspect of it? And how does it connect, if it connects, to the manifestation piece that you've described?
Yeah. I mean, I would argue that what we're dealing with here is life force itself, right? It's creation energy itself. And so if that is high for you, then it's just like your bank account is more full. It's like you have more energetic currency with which to direct to the dream. Because the hypothesis that I'm making is that you can direct this creation energy to your dreams. And if that is low, if you're dealing with low libido, depression, social anxiety, porn addiction, that you can only orgasm from one specific way or one specific type of stimulation, then it's just you have less currency in your bank account with which to direct. However, nothing is impossible, right? Like, love is not a... what's that, like when you have like a resource that's not, that you can't replenish? Like, no, love is
inexhaustible.
Yeah, like love is an inexhaustible resource. And so all of that is very mutable and changeable and very quickly. And I would argue that these energies have very potent healing capabilities as well. So I don't want to speak out of turn. Like, I do think that multi-orgasmic man is probably the place to start if people are interested in knowing the math and the semen retention. And I've certainly heard that as well. But if you think about it specifically as, you know, ejaculate as life force, right? Then if you are holding it, then or ejaculating, then you have more, you can modulate it as you see fit. Now, I think that it very much depends on the person, right? Like, again, if someone is 17, their life force is very high, their drive is very high, and that is actually keeping them from being able to be present or to enjoy a sports game or enjoy a date with someone, then maybe you, the opposite is true, that you want to think about ways to expend and you want to think about ways to let that energy flow through you, which is perhaps different than at 72, right? Where you really want to do everything you can to build that life for. So that you always want to look at the state of being of the person and then what is the optimal end goal. From what I've heard with people who identify as female, that it's basically just as many orgasms as much as possible. There's no math on like, oh, you should retain or you should conserve or you should keep it at a certain place. It's just like really like the more orgasms, the better as far as brain health, skin elasticity, immune function, mood regulation. But I think, again, to your point, the type of love that we are making matters. And again, this is not to shame or blame anybody. Like, I think that porn has a place, but like, and like you can kill yourself with water, you know, like water can become poison at a certain dose. And so if you are addicted to pornography, or if you feel like it's shrinking your ability to be present or to make love to another human being, then that might be something that you want to address. Mm-hmm. You know, even like with my partner, he mentioned yesterday, he was like, he was not ejaculating. And I like, after like a day, I was like, just checking. I was like, how you feeling? And he was like, edgy, you know? And so it was like, there was a building and a retaining and a building and a retaining to the point where he has quite a lot of life force. He has quite a lot of drive. And so for him to retain was sort of putting him in a direction that didn't feel enjoyable, but it's also possible that we're just, you know, that there's more mastery to gain. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Very interesting. It seems, I have to say, it seems a bit unfair that women can have unlimited orgasms with no consequences, but men are in this predicament where we ejaculate too much and we've got to pay the price for it.
Well, I think, again, it's, we're talking now about ejaculation, not orgasm, right? Because ostensibly it's like,
but for orgasming without... For 99% of men, those two things are one and the same.
Right. But I actually think if you're going to play the game, like if we're truly looking for optimal,
yeah,
then we're talking about orgasm without ejaculation. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's not about not orgasming. It's about, you know,
if we want to have sex 17 times a day, like my buddy does, then it's all about non-ejaculatory orgasm.
I don't, but I will say this, once I started doing this work, and this is sort of embarrassing to admit, but once I was able to couple my pleasure with my ability to manifest, it shot it way up the priority list for me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, isn't that interesting? That like before, when it was just pleasure, when if it was just about like being good for you and connection to the divine and connection to your partner, then I put that way down the priority list of like, well, I don't have time for that, or money is more important, or being a mom is more important, or going to the gym is more important, or taking care of my team. Like everything else would take priority to pleasure. Mm-hmm. But now that I have coupled these things in my mind, it's like I can justify, if you will, like making it more of a priority. Now that speaks very much to the capitalism and patriarchy that we're all swimming in. But I think just naming that and saying that hopefully will inspire someone else to reprioritize their own pleasure, because then like good news, like when you are happy, when you are balanced, when you are radiant, when you are plugged into your own creative source of power, everything else gets easier. People want to hire you. They want to date you. They want to collaborate with you. They want to, you know, there's a million ways that you become more attractive and more valuable when you are plugged into source. Mm-hmm.
So digging into manifestation specifically a bit more, how do you think about what is actually happening with manifestation? Because, you know, many years ago, there was the movie The Secret that came out, and the idea that seemed to be promoting was one of kind of like, if you focus on your vision of what your dream is, what your goals are, that it will manifest, it will sort of come into your reality. And as you know, one of my closest friends and mentors is John Assaraf, who was one of the gurus in the movie The Secret. And he got so annoyed with so many people thinking of manifestation in that way, that he came up with, you know, that was the secret, the law of attraction was that idea of, you know, think, envision it and think about it, and then it will come into reality. He created the law of Goya, G-O-Y-A, which is the law of get off your ass. And that was the law of like, hey, sitting around and thinking about it and visualizing it won't make it magically appear. This isn't magic. You got to get off your ass and you got to come up with a plan and a strategy and a set of tactics and what you are actually going to do every day to make your vision happen. Mm-hmm. And then he's also, obviously, his company is NeuroGym. He talks about it very much from a neuroscience perspective. What is your sort of paradigm about manifestation? So we've mm-hmm. got this sexual energy piece, and then it's programming your whole body to fall in love with your dreams. And then how does that connect to the achievement of the dream?
Yeah, it's so funny that you say this, because all morning I've been having this, I guess, I don't know if it's a slogan or what, like rolling around in my head. And I was like, why is this here? Like all morning. And it's just pray and move your feet, pray and move your feet, pray and move your feet, pray and move your feet. I'm hearing it on repeat because I'm in, you know, I've been teaching manifesting now for like 6 or 7 years, like tens of thousands of people. And there's a whole, you know, I have literal whole masterclasses on this because it's more nuanced than making a vision board. And it's certainly not like just picture it and then don't do anything. Like one of the key ingredients to manifestation is take inspired action. Mm-hmm. So really what we're doing when we're manifesting, it does not absolve you of your to-do list, right? Like that's still your job. That's still your responsibility. The 3D plane, the stuff that you can accomplish in a day, the calls you've got to make, the website you've got to build, like that's still all in your purview. The reason why we manifest is to make sure that the orders are being placed for the things that are outside of our control. Mm. Right. And so it's basically like you getting clear on nature's to-do list. Now, where and God bless the secret. Like I'm actually in a group called Transformational Leadership Council with most of those people that shot that film, and God bless them because they brought a pretty hippy dippy esoteric concept into the mainstream. It's now a verb. I'm gonna secret it, you know, and to Google it, you know, like they really took something that was in fact a secret and made it pretty mainstream. And now it's just our opportunity to refine it, right? It's our opportunity because it was a little bit kindergarten, right? Of like, if I think about a Ferrari, I can manifest a Ferrari and then I will be happy. And it's no, they are not kindergarten, those teachers. They are very masterful, but they had to start at kindergarten level because that's what people were ready for in the 80s and 90s. Now, because it has become a part of the zeitgeist, we can refine this conversation, right? So the old paradigm is like, let me think about a Ferrari and then I'll get a Ferrari and then I will be happy, right? They, just like I did with meditation when I started teaching it 12 years ago, I was like, hey, do this thing. It's going to help you have better sex and make more money. I didn't care why people started meditating. I just cared that they did because I knew that regardless, their state of consciousness would increase. So with manifestation, where people get tripped up is that they think, well, once I manifest the thing, then I will be happy, right? But that's an addiction like anything else. That's the I'll be happy when syndrome. And so the way that I teach manifesting, meditation has to come first. Like you actually have to be able to plug into the unmanifest. You have to drop into those deeper states of consciousness. You have to be able to flood your brain and body with dopamine and serotonin on a regular, repeatable, and self-sufficient way, so that you are no longer under the illusion that any external person, place, or thing will make you happy or can make you fulfilled. And it is only from that place of true detachment that you have the luxury of manifestation, because then you no longer think that the thing will bring you the joy, which paradoxically allows you to open up your hand and actually receive the thing that nature already wants you to have.
That was very beautifully explained.
Thank you.
I almost want to finish the podcast on that. That was so good.
Sometimes I just like to go to church. Felt like a good one.
So you're launching a new podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about it. I saw an image on social media on Facebook that was like a picture of you with the name of the podcast, but it was blacked out.
Ooh.
And
good job, team.
Like you were keeping the name a secret.
Well, when is this podcast and when is this dropping? Do we know?
I don't know. When do you want it to drop?
I mean, around May would be great because I'll just say the name. I'll say the name.
Okay.
Okay. So, and then if you guys are the first to hear it, then like exciting times. So the show is called Why Isn't Everyone Doing This? Mm. why isn't everyone doing this? And there, because two times in my life, I have had that like, that like ding, 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 ding. Like, why isn't everyone doing this? And the first time was around meditation. Mm-hmm. And I could feel the profundity of what was happening in my body. And I could feel how the zeitgeist was about to change culturally around it. And I am having that feeling right now around sacred sexuality. And I can feel the profundity of what it is doing in my life. And I can feel how it is about to change the zeitgeist once we really start to reclaim this power for ourselves. Mm. And so these are the things that I'm really excited about talking about, but I'm bringing on all kinds of amazing guests so that they can share their this. You know, why isn't everyone doing this? Why isn't everyone voting? Why isn't everyone composting? Why isn't everyone biohacking? Why isn't everyone managing their energy? There's a million different ways, but then we also talk about the why.
That's a really good idea. I like it.
Thanks. Yeah. I'm so excited about it.
So are you going to keep it in, you know, kind of, you were just describing a lot of different subjects. Are you going to, and just the name of your podcast, the branding, it could be taken in a variety of different ways where.
What ways do you hear? What do you hear?
Well, I mean, if you're going to talk about, let's say, composting, right? Now you're talking about opening this up to like an infinite variety of topics that fall under that fit into this category of like, hey, why isn't everybody doing this? Or are you going to go more the direction of like specifically keeping it in the realm of meditation and sacred sexuality and like emphasizing why isn't everybody doing these two specific things?
Great question. And we just shot 12 episodes. So because we like batch them because it's in Los Angeles, my studio is in LA and I live in New York. So I think because of the nature of the batching, I think there's going to be sort of a natural theme or seasons that will emerge. And so I'm very much leaning into this first season, if you will, being around meditation, manifestation, sacred sexuality. And I don't want to be limited exclusively to that. So I think this will be more a game of batching so that as a listener and as a viewer, you get to go on a ride, that you really get to, from week to week, immerse yourself in perhaps new and taboo modalities. I'm also talking a lot about psychedelics and different, you know, mind expanding experiences, mm-hmm. because there's a similar level of profundity and taboo nature around both. Sacred sexuality is really just like internal psychedelics, if you will. It's like accessing these really potent, life-changing states, but it's happening endogenously versus, you know, with psychedelics, we can do that in a ceremonial way. So first season is certainly around meditation, sacred sexuality, and psychedelics, and then open to where the show evolves.
All right. And out of curiosity, in your own personal experience, have you, if you want to divulge, have you ever mixed the exogenous and endogenous supply in the sense of like the sacred sexuality whilst on MDMA, for example?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've done it on a lot of different medicines. The first time I ever did what I'm calling pleasure prayer, what I think historically has been called sex magic, it was post a ceremony that my partner and I had created. It was like a whole journey. And then Layla, my best friend, an amazing tantra teacher, led a co-ed pleasure prayer practice for her friends for the first time. So sort of like an initiation for both of us. And I have mixed them. Now, look, I don't think you need to, and I'm not campaigning for anything. Like, people always have to check in with themselves to feel like what they're ready for. What are they resourced for? Do they have the proper integration? Have they done the proper trauma clearing? You know, all that stuff really matters going into it. For myself, I've been doing so much like purging work. You know, I'm meditating now twice a day for 16 years. So there's just a level of clearing of the channel that has been happening for a long time. So I feel quite resilient in going into these practices, and I have a really robust network to help me integrate. And that's not the case for everyone. You know, if you've never meditated before, if you've never done breath work, if you've never done a silent meditation retreat, and suddenly you start having really potent sex practices combined with really potent medicines, I think it can blast you a little too far open too fast. And so I just want to state that disclaimer, but yes, I've definitely played with both, and there's like infinite capabilities. Mm-hmm.
Very nice. What's a cosmic lover?
Way to bring it back.
You said you were going to tell us later on and we never got to it. So as we're wrapping up, I'm giving you 1 minute to answer what a cosmic lover is.
It's bigger than boyfriend or girlfriend.
How much bigger? Like 10 times bigger?
Like cosmically like bigger.
20% bigger? Universe size bigger?
Cosmically, like energetically. Uh-huh. And it also feels like in our particular case, we were long distance. I was in New York and he was in Austin. And so we had to learn how to grow our energy bodies so that we could actually connect in a way that didn't feel like it was long distance. Mm. And so it felt like big, profound love that was not necessarily confined by our 3D bodies. And then good news, if you can make love on the energetic plane, then when you do get to have your 3D bodies together, then it's like a really fun bonus round. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Is there anything else you want to tell people before we go?
Well, just that I really hope that they check out Why Isn't Everyone Doing This? It's going to be on YouTube and all the platforms. And then also if they're just interested in just plain old life-changing Ziva meditation, there's a cool masterclass that's free that they can get at zivameditation.com/podcast.
Sweet. Thank you so much, my friend. It was a pleasure. And Tiara will be ready for you on round number 4.
Great. I'll get my waves ready.
There you go. I thought it was this one, the hand sort of side to side.
Oh, wait, this is Miss America. This is the queen.
Oh, okay.
Because she doesn't want to get.
You have it dialed in.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. All right. Talk to you soon, my friend. Thank you so much for coming on the show again. It was always a pleasure.
What a joy.
Hey there, this is Ari again. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, if you found it valuable, please share it with your friends, share it with your family, help me get the word out there. Also, if you're on YouTube, make sure to hit the subscribe button and hit that little bell to get notifications every time we release a new video or new episode of the podcast. And if you're listening to this, make sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or on your favorite podcast. Thanks so much for supporting my work at the Energy Blueprint. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I will see you in the next.